Some little dog shit candy.
Yes.
Good weekend.
Yeah. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection to order Monday, March 30th. Good afternoon. I've got a couple of bills that I'm going to go into work session on in regards to landlord rental issues, which should be relatively brief, and then we'll get on with the public hearing on House Bill 2470. So with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2613. Up first, we have, who do we have?
Andrew Ainsworth,
please. If you could briefly remind the committee what the bill was and the amendment you came back with, and whether you've got broad-based support.
Thank you. Chair Holby, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andrew Ainsworth. I'm here on behalf of Representative Buckley. So House Bill 2613, if you may remember, has to do with utility rates in mobile home parks. It arose from an issue in Representative Buckley's district with the Meyer Lynn mobile home park. So we worked with everybody who has an interest in this, and we're able to come up with amendments that we hope the committee will adopt today and then move the bill out. So we came up with the -3 amendments upon consultation with the landlord and the tenants of the Meyer Lynn Mobile Home Park, as well as Rick Wilson, PUC, and John Langenham of the Landlord Tenant Coalition. And so the -3s that you have before you, I believe, basically just clarify what our intent of the bill is to make sure that the landlord isn't left in a gray area not knowing whether or not he or she has to bill at the residential rate versus the commercial rate, or vice versa. So the -3s simply clarify what we seek to accomplish with the bill. The -5 was an addition requested of us by Rick Willis of the Public Utility Commission, and I believe he has similar language with some other bills just that are also working their way through the legislature that kind of touch on this issue. So the -5 doesn't really affect us that much, but Rick Willis wanted us to put that in there, so we have brought it forth. So that's all I have.
I see Mr. Van Landingham here. Maybe he could, if he's so willing, to come up and just give us a brief little statement of support or opposition, whichever he feels like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, John Van Landingham from Lane County Legal Aid, and Andrew is exactly correct. I did work with a number of other parties, including Andrew, and fully support the -3 amendments, and I think it's a great bill. Please vote yes.
And so have you seen the -5s that the PUC wanted to bring forward?
It has to do with Barney Cheese Bill as well. It's going to go.
Is that
Mr. Chair, I believe that the -5s I would support also.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. And so, Mr. Ainsworth, I am assuming that your recommendation is we adopt both the -3 and the -5.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. So, and I believe you can just sit there for a moment. I'm entertaining a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
Thank you. I move the -3 and -5 amendments to the House Bill 2613.
Representative Riley moves the -3 and -5 amendments to House Bill 2613. Discussion. Is there any objection to adopting those two amendments? Hearing none, so adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
Is there a subsequent on this?
No.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2613 to the floor of the do-pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves House Bill 2613 as amended to the floor with the do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Cindy, could I have a roll call vote in alphabetical order, please?
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Callen?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
She's excused.
Representative Wingard?
Aye.
Vice Chair Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2613, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor. Carrier, suppose we could have Representative Buckley carry this bill.
Sure. Andrew could do it. Buckley doesn't show up for anything.
Yeah. Buckley's always there.
So, with that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2613 and open a work session on House Bill 2614. Mr. Ainsworth.
All right, so 2614, the only thing I need...
Could you introduce yourself again for
Andrew
the record?
Ainsworth on behalf of Representative Buckley here once again. So House Bill 2614, the only thing I need to clarify is last time I was here, I misspoke and said that it does not apply to mobile home parks. As had mobile home parks swirling in my mind, given the other bill and various amendments there. So it does apply to all rentals, whether they be, you know, apartments or homes or mobile home parks, that sort of thing. So just want to correct the record there. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I can't recall. Do we have testimony, written testimony from the landlord and tenant people? I don't have anything in my file.
I didn't have anything from them either, I don't believe. Victoria, any other testimony?
They're coming forward. You can't help them.
And there's no amendments to this bill?
No.
We have no revenue, no fiscal. Any other discussion? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps a question. It just strikes me as I read this bill that it's not necessarily narrowly tailored to what presumably is the issue it's addressing. For example, what if it's a 10-story building? What if it's a 50-floor building? It strikes me as it somehow not narrowly tailored to the issue of flood damage.
Well, Chair Holy, Representative Barton, you do make a good point that has crossed my mind in the past as well, but you never really can predict how high a flood may go. And at the same time, all it requires is a notification if, you know, the rental is in a 100-year floodplain, so it's not that burdensome, I wouldn't think.
And certainly there's oftentimes garages in the bottom floor of those buildings as well.
And you need to get in and out.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cowan.
What did you say?
Mr. Chair, the only notes that I find in my file was a notification that this is the same notification as is required for a seller of the home in a floodplain. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, Representative Cowan.
Which I thought was important, so I thought I'd mention.
Thank you for bringing that forward. Representative Wingard, question?
It was a comment, and I'm thinking better of it, so.
Thank you.
Pass.
Appreciate that, Mr. Van Landingham. Any comments on this bill?
John Van Landingham, Lane County Legal Aid. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The General Landlord-Tenant Coalition did not take a position on 2614.
Mm-hmm.
I would note that I think the most likely residential tenancies to be at risk of flooding are older manufactured home parks, because in the early days before we did some serious land use planning, especially in the 70s. A lot of manufactured home parks were placed in floodplains. They were viewed as mobile, and they were viewed as temporary uses, so that someday this land would be used for something else. So a lot of mobile home parks were put in industrial commercial zones or in floodplains. So I can see certainly see the value with regard to manufactured home parks.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just going through this, is this going to be retroactive? I can't see where it really says. So I worry about people who might have some a tenant already in. They've already done the paperwork.
Chair Holvey, Representative Widener, if I may answer a question. Section 3 says that it applies to rental agreements that a tenant enters into on or after the effective date of the act.
Okay.
Any other questions? We're in work session, so I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
I move House Bill 2614 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves House Bill 2614 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Barton.
I pass, Mr. Chair.
Other questions, comments, or discussion? Seeing none. Cindy, can I have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Excused.
Representative Wingert?
No.
Vice Chair Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holden?
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2614, having received required votes, declared passed. Carrier on this bill, Representative Buckley. I'm glad that he volunteered for both of those. With that, I'll close the work session on 2614. And I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2470. Victoria, you want to give us a brief preview of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2470 establishes conditions for possessing 10 or more sexually intact dogs aged 4 months or older and prohibits possessing more than 25 such dogs with exceptions, makes violation a Class B misdemeanor, imposes disclosure requirements on the sale of dogs by pet dealers, and provides remedies to customers if dogs have undisclosed infirmities.
Thank you. And this bill committee, if you recall, we did develop a work group on this bill headed up by Representative Riley and Representative Widener. And I assigned my staff to facilitate that, to take notes and try to keep track of the proposals and conversations. And clearly, I think they came back with a couple of amendments, and I was hoping to get a chance to have the two vice chairs and Re-Armitage give us a kind of a layout of the amendments that we're looking at now to this bill. Yeah, sure, that'd be great. So, committee, as you recall, we did instruct them to go away and to meet with stakeholders and to come back with a couple of different amendments for us to look at, and I think that's what they've done. And so I'll process-wise, Representative okay. Riley, you want to just give us a feel for what happened in the work group and who was represented and whatnot?
Mr. Chair, I heard it was a dog-eat-dog situation.
Oh, no, it started already.
Got to do it. For the record, Chuck Riley representing Hillsborough, Cornelius, and Forest Grove. We had an interesting work group. We discussed a lot of topics, including cap size, that's what you do in a boat. The size of the cap.
The cap limit is such.
Yeah, the limit. And, we discussed whether pet shops should be included. We discussed how much, what kind of conditions were applicable. We discussed some things like, what about trainers who have other people's dogs on site? They're not for breeding, they're there to be trained, but they are intact and so could be bred. And, you know, a host of other issues. And, we did not reach consensus, I would have to say. And we tried very hard to understand everyone's concerns and to come away with the best bill we could. There will be some discussion about whether we succeeded.
Certainly, Representative Widener, comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Jim Widener, House District 24. Sitting through and going through the process, there we did have troubles coming to a consensus. One of the things I saw looking at the dash four amendments, it kind of addresses what everybody was after because it does have a cap number on it. I had a little bit of trouble after I started going through our animal laws that are already in existence and going through the book and realizing how strict we were on animal laws for all animals, not just dogs, but all pets in regards. And we're very strict in the state of Oregon at this point. So I think this is going well above and beyond and captures everything that we need to do. But the dash 4 minute amendments doesn't limit the size of what a person's business can be. It says you need to have staff for every 75 dogs. There needs to be one person there to exercise, take care of them and everything. So I think dash 4 does a pretty good job of getting at what you were wanting to get at, Chair. And it makes the breeders happy. That are working with dogs day in and day out. I think it makes the trainers happy and everyone else, but it was one I had a little trouble just because we were very strict, and I was seeing when we started dealing with care and conditions, temperature ranges of 50 degrees to 85 degrees, and I personally don't have air conditioning in my house, and my dogs see over 85 degrees, so I would be punishing my dogs just for the temperatures they live in, and my kids and my wife and I are subject to it.
Is that
every day
in
the
one
summer.
Of the amendments?
Not in the dash 4, and I didn't look at the other ones to see if it was removed or not at this point.
And we'll have Mr. Armitage, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, Ree Armitage, staff to Representative Holby. There is no temperature requirement in dash 1 through 4. Just to go back a little bit, there was a lot of discussion of the so-called engineering standards, and I think all four of the amendments represent some attempt at compromise between in the discussion, some attempt at trying to listen to all sides of the work group. There is no specific temperature requirement. It covers the well-being of the dog, and the only thing that in the minimum care standards, there are some increases in addition to ORS 167.310. All four of the amendments have some language regarding rest between breeding cycles and excessive breeding, and they do have some standards for the enclosure. 6 inches above the height of the dog, and language in that regard. All four of the amendments do represent some compromise and some discussion. All four of the amendments have the dash threes and fours do not have a cap of any kind for sexually intact ownership. The dash ones and twos do have a cap of 50 sexually intact dogs over the age of two. And if you guys, excuse me, if the members remember, in the original bill, there was sexually intact over the age of 4 months, and in the amendments, the dash ones and twos, it's sexually intact over the age of 2 years. So basically, if you're looking at a breeding facility, that would mean that you could have 50 sexually intact dogs, and they would have significant litters in their breeding facility because you have the ability for those puppies to be up to 2 years before they come under the cap. And that was over some discussions about breeders who do attempt to show their dogs. They decide to sometimes it takes up to 2 years for them to consider those dogs for show purposes. And so we took that into account. Another thing I'd like to point out that hasn't been mentioned is all four of the amendments have something that there was, I think, pretty widespread agreement on, was that pet stores are often a starting point or a huge part of this problem for the proliferation of puppy mills. There's a short way to put it would be is that there's a notice of origin requirement in all four of the amendments that requires that a retail pet store disclose the notice of origin amongst other things that you'll see in those amendments. And to get back to make it somewhat clearer. The dash ones and twos are, the only difference between the dash ones and twos is an engineering standard regarding slats. There was some discussion late in the work group process that centered around whether or not slats should be allowed. So we did have, I did draft two amendments, one that allowed for non-hazardous slats and one that allowed for stacking of enclosures, and the dash twos prohibit slats and stacking. And that's really the only difference between the dash ones and twos and the only difference between the dash threes and fours. And you guys, there should be a summary there, are that the, it's exactly the same, that the dash threes allow for non-hazardous slats and stacking of enclosures, and the dash fours prohibit slats and stacking. But, and the dash threes and fours also, like I said, have no cap language with regards to sexually intact.
So was there any kind of agreement around the slats and stacking issue?
No, not at this point. That's why there are four options for the committee to consider.
Okay. Mr. Chair, about the temperature, the reason that's taken out is because it's breed-specific. Some breeds can stand very low temperatures and can't stand high temperatures, and other breeds just the opposite. So putting that temperature standard in the bill just makes no sense at all.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to speak real briefly, there are some needs perhaps for one additional amendment. We did spot some drafting errors. There is a need, I think, after discussing with all the work group members, there isn't a, if we do increase these minimum care standards, there is going to be a need for exemption in the for the purposes of transportation. Any person transporting a dog, they can't meet some of those enclosure requirements in the amendments.
That didn't get into the amendments?
That did not. It was a drafting error. It was not included. There is also the language that came in with regarding the one staff per 75 dogs. That was not drafted in its original intent. There was supposed to be very limited exemptions for that. It was supposed to apply to all dogs and all facilities. And in the all four of the amendments, it applies. There's far too many exemptions, and it applies to sexually intact dogs when it should apply. That particular section should... regarding the one staff per 75 dogs should have no exemptions as far as our original intent from drafting.
Right. So needless to say, we'll have another amendment coming out at least to address those issues or two. Any other changes from the original bill? There's probably lots of changes in these amendments. I don't know if you want to touch on any of them specifically, but essentially we're going. The original bill was 25 dogs. The cap limit was 25 sexually intact dogs. Now it's 50 sexually intact dogs, and it goes up to 2 years instead of 4 months on that cap. So a dog would have to be over 2 years old before it went against that cap. Am I understanding that correct?
Yes.
And,
Mr. Chair, if I may, one please. Additional point of discussion should be in section, it depends on the amendment. There's the consumer protection piece, the so-called lemon law piece that was in the original bill. There's been some significant changes to that in all four amendments. There was, I think that consumer protection piece or lemon law piece raised some considerable red flags, and there probably will be continued discussion today about that from some of our additional testifiers. But we tried to reach a point of tried to get to closer to the middle ground there. The original bill, there was 30 days that you could see a veterinarian, and we took it down to 15 days, so that I think that there's some concern that 30 days is far too long for a consumer to perhaps have their dog develop something that was out of the control of the breeder. And so we tried to reach some compromise there and take that down to 15 days. We took a 2-year requirement for a congenital disease that was discovered that was not disclosed to a buyer, took that down to 1 year. And I think some of the language in there is also much clearer about if a breeder or a pet dealer in terms of the language of the bill makes a good faith effort in their disclosure. And as far as I understand, a lot of the breeders who participate in the work group and a lot of the breeders in Armchair that I've heard from and that are here today offer a wide, pretty large, substantial disclosure and contract when they sell the animals. And it's my understanding and the understanding, I think, of some of the other folks in the work group that that they would be well above and beyond what this consumer law piece requires. I think that this is targeted at a lot of folks that are uneducated, buying dogs out of the back of a van or that type of sale transaction. So,
thank you. Questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, especially for Representative Riley or Vice Chair Widener. My hat's off to you for sticking with this work group. But my question is this. Given the scope of this and the controversy and your report that you didn't reach consensus, I'm curious, did it come up that we start from scratch? I know the dreaded task force for some means, you know, a dead end, but honestly, I'm wondering, did that come up, the possibility of a task force over the next legislative cycle to have a bill that bubbles up from Oregon about this important subject?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, no. And I can tell you that there are some sticking points that no matter where we start, we're going to come up against the same sticking points.
Chair Holvey, Representative Gilliam, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's what was going through my mind after we started this process, because when I started looking at this very closely and when we were taking testimony in the very beginning, most of the cases that came in before us were people who had been arrested or busted for having a puppy mill or not taking care of their dogs properly. And one of the things I saw in the whole process is more a paper trail would probably make more sense, and I think AKC and most reputable dog breeders would love to have that in place themselves because it helps them out. But when you buy your dog, you know where it comes from, you know its heritage, its lineage, and it clears things up dramatically for you. And I think that would probably be a better direction for us to be going than the direction we're going with this bill that we have before us. So I think an interim work group to put something together for the next session probably would be a fairly good idea, that then we could draw a consensus between all parties and make sure we're providing quality puppies to everybody in the state of Oregon.
So I take it from that you're not supporting either amendment or either bill or the bill.
I am. If I have to support one, it will be the dash fours, but looking at our laws and where we're at right now, which I have a book up there at the desk, we are very strict on our animal laws that we have on the books at this point. So, but I think for controlling the puppy mills and getting at it that way in the pet stores, a paper trail is a much better way to go. Mm-hmm. And then we can trace it back to its place of origin.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of this bill does that, does it not? Yep.
I believe so.
Any other questions? Representative Cowan.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if there was any discussion or whether this is something that we just haven't delved into very much. All of the amendments relate to a congenital disorder and the right of return. We considered, or was there any conversation about some provision for those for which there is available genetic testing? In other words, there are many things that fall under a congenital disorder, and I'm thinking about how we reassure breeders that that's basically only the things for which there are currently approved tests.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cowan, I don't believe that specific idea came up at all. I can see some merit to that, but I don't believe that came up at all.
Thank you. I raised the question if we need to go back for some adjustments. Anyway, it has been raised to me, and there might be just a little bit of verbiage we could put in that would be protective in that when we decide which set of amendments we're going to rework.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cowan, the one thing that I think could apply to that is, in discussions with breeders, they often have a lot of the reputable breeders give a written sort of disclosure of all the potential congenital disorders and a history of the breed, that type of, and there is some significant discussion in all four of the amendments about that. Regarding testing, that specific issue, as Representative Riley noted, it didn't come up.
Other questions? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for so I can clarify the questions in my head, assuming that this legislature wishes to move forward with some kind of standard of care legislation in this session, the difference between the dash 1 and dash 2 amendment and also between the dash 3 and dash 4, the only difference between those would be the prohibition on slats and stacking, and also the difference between dash 1 and 3 and also between dashes 2 and 4 is the cap. Is that correct? So those are the only differences between those amendments?
Chair Holby, Representative Barton, yes. The reason there was 4 drafted was right. Only because of the slats.
2.
Yeah.
Understood.
Chair. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Chair Holvey. And Representative Barton brings up a point that's been on my mind recently. I met with several folks on both sides of this issue, and I think it's important that I've been one that signed on early and have said I'm not going to bail out on this. I think we have to have something that we move forward with, and I'm committed to that. So I guess in looking at the biggest difference in the conversations I've had with people, it's about a number and a cap. And we looked at the 25, and now it's been doubled to 50. And I think the point that I continue to hear, and I love your comments because you were in the work group, Representative Widener, Representative Riley, and we feel free to jump in too. But it is, it seems to me that somebody could be unfit as a breeder with one dog, just as they could be very fit with 100. And so I'm just kind of curious where you might be on that. And I've talked to both sides on this issue, and I understand why we have a cap. But I'm just wondering if we're actually getting to the real problem here with having a cap, or if it'd be better to get everybody on board and move this thing forward. I don't know. That's for you guys.
You want to start?
Your remarks are right on, Representative Matthews. Care and conditions is probably the biggest thing to address. We hit it very well in the laws that we have in place now. There's a couple things that we could do to adjust our laws to make them a little tougher and our statutes that we have, because there's lots of people out there that have one dog and they're not even breeding it, that don't take care of it properly. There's lots of breeders who might have 50 dogs that are doing a great job with them. It's about getting your facility set up right and properly for raising and training your dogs. And you'll see that with a lot of the people and the breeders that are here today. You know, they actually truly, honestly do care and want to be doing the right thing. And if you go out to their facilities, they're set up to clean their pens regularly on a daily basis. They're not in this necessarily for the money. They're in it for the joy of when I come over with my two kids and they get their new puppy, you know, and seeing the joy on the kid's face. And they're wanting to do the right thing. You're always going to have those cases where you have that person that's a hoarder or has some sort of mental issue where they're just going to have a lot of dogs and not be taking care of them, and they're going to keep putting them in kennels. It doesn't matter what laws we put in place. These things are going to keep happening, and there's nothing we can do here because they're already breaking the law by making these decisions now. And it's finding a way to address those issues, and those are sad scenarios that I don't know if we're going to be able to change by changing any of our laws at this time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, from my point of view and from what I garnered from the work group, the cap is a matter of being able to determine if you're one of those people out in the field trying to solve this puppy mill problem, which is what this bill is about. This bill is not about pet owners. This is about people who are in the business of making money off of dogs, selling dogs. That's what this bill is about. And
what we want to do is to stop the bad practices that we see quite often. And what we hear from the people who are in the enforcement part of this is that they need one more tool, and that is a cap. And they're quite adamant about it. And I listen to them. I listen to the breeders on the other side say, makes no sense. They say exactly what other people I've heard say. One dog can be mistreated just like 100. And that's true, but this bill is not about pet owners. It's about puppy mills. And that's where we want to go with this.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go ahead and cut you guys off at this point. Senator Walker's here to testify, and I need to get her up. She's been waiting for a bit, and you'll have opportunities to speak from up here.
I talked to our local county sheriff and stuff as well on this very issue.
You can speak to that in a little bit. Thanks. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Vicki Walker, State Senate District 7. And I thought the last point that Representative Riley made was really the nuts and bolts of this bill. And I know what work groups are like when you have disparate interests, so my hat's off to you, Representative Riley, for doing the work group. But the point about this is not about pet owners. This is about people who are in the business of breeding dogs and selling dogs. That's what this bill is about. And the enforcement piece is the most critical piece, and you have so little that you can do in law enforcement with regard to puppy mills. But this one, if you set a cap, you can do that. I will tell you that if you don't have a cap on this bill, I can no longer support it. I think you have achieved nothing if you have no cap. 50 dogs. If you look at the fact sheet that was provided to you by the Humane Society, and I don't dispute that, the average female breeding dog can have at least 2 litters every year. And in many puppy mills, it's common for them to have more. Assuming 18 of the dogs are females with an average litter size of under 5 puppies, breeders will be able to sell as many as 180 puppies a year. So if you bring that cap, that's with a cap of 25. So you bring it up to 50, you just double those numbers. You have 36 females, and you have 360 puppies a year. Now, some of those puppies don't make it. Some of them have congenital illnesses that make them unmarketable. But, you know, this is a lot of dogs, 50 dogs. I got my dog from a breeder. I had to go to Arizona to find my dog because I bought a Tibetan Terrier, and at the time I bought my dog, there were no known reputable breeders, in my view, in Oregon, none that I were aware of. I did learn of a puppy store in Eugene that was selling Tibetans. They were not AKC registered, and someone bought one, and they were so proud of owning this purebred dog, and this purebred dog had lots of problems. And we turned the store in, but there was nothing anyone could do about it. There's no law on the books regarding puppy mills and where you get them from. And Mr. Chair, you know, because you and I have discussed this bill previous to it being drafted, we worked on it together in the drafting stage. One of my pieces of concern was the puppy stores. The ones in Valley River Center and wherever you go, where are those dogs coming from? There's no paper trail. So I really wanted more of an effort put on the store owners and where you're getting the dog from, and you needed to have that paper trail and know the history of your dog. I've not had any problems with my dog. And the breeder in Arizona has bred one more time with her dog, and in fact when she saw my dog after he was about a year or so old, she asked us if we would reconsider and not have him neutered because he was quite beautiful, and we said no, thank you, we do not want an intact dog. But she offered to give us a dog if we allowed him to go to stud, but we were quite happy the way we were, and our dog was purchased for a pet, not for a show dog. I am here supporting the Dash 2 amendments. I believe that you need the cap of 50 intact dogs. And I am not supportive of the slats. Now, you're going to get argument about that, but for me, that's just open for someone to allow the pet to have feces go through the slats, and if you stack these dogs, you get feces coming down and urine coming down on top of them. You know, there's a lot of people in this room, probably every breeder in this room is a reputable breeder, but there are some in the state who are not, and we've seen examples of that across the state, most recently in Burns. We've all heard about that case. So sometimes you just have to develop laws for the few who spoil it for the rest. And when I became a court reporter 25 years ago, we didn't have to be certified. We could be voluntarily certified if we wanted, and we did become certified if we wanted to. But the reason we pushed for that is because there were some court reporters out there who weren't quite up to snuff. And there were others who were. So you just sometimes have to make a law that covers the few, because it's the only way you're going to stop this horrible practice. And I love dogs too much to see this happen to dogs. And I will tell you also that there are a number of purebred dogs in our shelters right now. Probably about 25% of the dogs in our shelters are purebred. So, which is one of the statistics I've given, and I hear murmurs in the back, and some people may disagree with that, and they can dispute that, and they can show me a different number. It would be nice if we could all buy our dog from a shelter and rescue these dogs from an uncertain or a very certain death. But in my family, we have severe allergies to dogs, and we're quite limited to the type of dog that we could have in our household, which is why we had to go through a breeder. Otherwise, I would have been happy to rescue a dog. But there are many shelters across the country who have rescued purebred dogs from owners who decided they can no longer keep them. So, Mr. Chair, I'll leave it with my recommendation to adopt the Dash 2s to at least give yourself a 50 cap. I just applaud you for working on this. It would have been in my basket had we started on the Senate side, and it'll be over there, hopefully, once you get this all resolved. But I think this is a problem, and it's been a problem enough that it needs to be corrected.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate your testimony. Questions for the Senator? Not Representative Widener.
Thank you, Chair Holby. Senator, did you check with your county sheriff to see how many puppy mills he's ran into or busted?
I did not, but I'd be happy to ask him that question. I would suspect my county sheriff is doing other things right now because the county commissioners refuse to fund their department to a level that's acceptable to the community for public safety.
Because I had this conversation with mine and our animal control, and there hasn't been any there. And when we sat and took testimony, the cases were brought before us were all dog owners that had been busted. Even the fellow in Burns had been busted before, so it was obviously a problem with this guy, and he knew what he was doing was illegal at the time as well. So I don't see how adding another law is going to make a difference when these guys are already doing it knowing that it's illegal.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Widener, I think that's up to the county sheriff to take care of the problem when he sees it, he or she. There are sheriffs that are women. I will also like to add that as I was listening, bless you, there are some concessions that have been made on the part of the people who are interested in this bill. You've decreased it from 30 days to 15 days to see a veterinarian. I actually wanted 20 days if you were going to decrease it, because 15 days is a very short period of time. And 2-year requirement for congenital diseases and deformities down to a year. I think there are concessions here. If you can't get any more concessions without, you know, even with a cap, or without a cap, then why are you compromising? I mean, there reaches a point where you can't answer every single question that every single person has. You do the best you can, and you try to reach consensus with as many people as you can. But in my view, there are a lot of disparate interests involved in this bill, and I'm not sure you're ever going to get them resolved.
Thank you, Senator, and I know you have a busy schedule, and I want to get you back to your duties on the other side of the building, because I know they're extremely important to this body.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually on your side of the building in a budget committee, but I do need
all the same, extremely important.
Yeah, all right. Thank you.
So how I'm going to do this, we put together a couple panels from people who participated in the work group on representing different positions on this bill. So I'd like to go through those panels relatively quickly. I'm probably going to try to limit them to 3 minutes apiece. And then as time allows, I'll try to get as much other public testimony as I can in after that. So with that, I'm going to call up Jim Doerr, Judy Bryant, Sharon Harmon, and Scott Beckstead, please. Good afternoon and welcome to the committee. And before you give your testimony, if you would identify yourself for the record, and whoever wants to go first, please jump in.
Thank you, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. My name is Scott Beckstead. I am the Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States. On behalf of our 145,000 members and constituents, I'm here to urge the committee to vote yes on the Dash 2 amendments to this bill, which we believe constitute a modest and common-sense approach to providing basic humane care to the dogs that live on these large-scale commercial dog breeding operations. I did participate in the work group. I think that the group was a group of people who care about animals and who were working together in good faith. The issue really came down to the question of whether a cap is appropriate. The original version of this bill, which we supported, included a cap of 25 dogs of a very young age. The Dash 2 amendment would increase the number to 50 dogs. Now, we're not talking about just 50 dogs. We're talking about 50 breeding dogs, dogs that are kept primarily for reproductive purposes. And we're not just talking about 50 breeding dogs, we're talking about 50 breeding dogs 2 years of age or older. So it's a major concession. That is a huge number of dogs. It is a huge number of puppies that a breeder would be able to produce. I would question whether there is a single reputable, responsible dog breeder in the state of Oregon who keeps 50 or more breeding dogs over the age of 2 years on their property. The truth is that the only dog breeders who are likely to be affected by the Dash 2 amendments are puppy mills, the very kind of operations that need to be shut down, or at least heavily regulated. Now, you might hear some testimony that there is no scientific evidence that the care of dogs is diminished over a certain number, and that may be true, but the Humane Society of the United States has rescued literally thousands of dogs from puppy mills across the country, and as the organization who has taken a lead in those rescue efforts, I can tell you that these cases are much more complicated when you are dealing with 300 or 800 dogs rather than 25 or 10 or 50 even. As recently as 2.5 weeks ago, the Humane Society of the United States, working shoulder to shoulder with Oregon Humane Society, was involved in a large-scale puppy mill operation in Harney County. If the Dash 2 amendments had been in effect, the Harney County Sheriff would have been able to go out long ago and prevented these animals from living in what can only be described as death camp conditions. A cap in the number of breeding dogs is absolutely essential if we are serious about cracking down on puppy mills and if we are serious about preventing puppy mills from establishing themselves in our state. The cap is the critical enforcement mechanism to regulate these operations. And without a cap, it is difficult, if not impossible, for law enforcement to have the initial cause to investigate. Setting a cap allows law enforcement to investigate these conditions before they turn into criminal neglect. And finally, if we fail to set a cap, then Oregon is likely to become a haven for unscrupulous breeders seeking to set up shop here. Our neighbors to the north, the state of Washington, has passed a 50-dog cap by a 35-11 margin. It's passed out of the House Judiciary and is now on its way to the House floor. If, as it appears will be the case, Washington passes a 50-dog cap in its puppy mill legislation, then we have to wonder if the puppy mills in that state are going to head south. The Dash 2 amendment set basic minimum care standards. We believe that it's important that these animals not be kept on slats, that they not be stacked. The Dash 2 amendment provides these dogs with an adequate space, clean environment, regular exercise, rest between breeding cycles.
And you need to wrap it up. You're a little bit over your time right now.
Thank you. What we are working for is not just any bill. What we are working for is a bill that will prevent Oregon from becoming a haven for these unscrupulous breeders. I ask that you adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2470. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Go ahead. Whoever's next.
Thank you, Representative Chairman Holvey, members of the committee. I'm Sharon Harmon. I'm with the Oregon Humane Society, a completely separate institution from the Humane Society of the United States. We support the Dash 2 amendments. We think that they're a good compromise, the product of the work group. I don't think in that work group we could ever agree on the issue of caps, but I was pleasantly surprised how close we were on standards of care. One line in the sand that I, representing my organization, I simply cannot advocate is the use of slatted floors. There is no way the dogs kept in that kind of housing are being taken out when the confinement is cleaned. When the cages are stacked, you have to ask yourself, what's the life of the dogs in the bottom cage? Someone likened it to having your big brother in the bunk above you. I wish it was only that pleasant for the dogs in the lower level. Dash 2 amendments ban the use of slats, ban the use of stacking cages, and provide a reasonable cap. Unfortunately, with comments we heard earlier, that Oregon has some really strong laws. This bill would not apply to hoarders. Hoarders, by the nature of their pathology, do not breed and sell or part with their animals. They may part with a few on that continuum of pathology, but this would not apply to them. We would still have hoarders to deal with. With respect to Oregon having really strong cruelty laws, for the hounds, the Walker hounds that we confiscated 2 weeks ago from Sandy from a kennel that was feces embedded. They could not open the door because the amount of dog waste in there. We had to return four of the five after the kennels were clean, and we had to keep one only because his shock collar became embedded in his neck. The other four dogs went to the life in the 4x8 pen with the shock collars on for their whole life. I think Oregon's laws could use a lot of improvement. We've grown a long way, and I think the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2470 are a reasonable approach to a state trying to grapple with puppy mills. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jamie Fitzpatrick. I'm currently employed at Willamette Humane Society. Previous to that, I was employed at Heartland Humane Society in Corvallis. I've been in Humane Societies for over 7 years, and in my time there, I was involved in a large case out of North Albany where 86 dogs were seized in horrible conditions, and something like House Bill 2470 with the provision of a cap, with a cap on the number of intact dogs, could have made a difference in that case. This specific case had gone back and forth, around and about, and not been able to be proceeded with because there was not a good way to get in, not a good way to get the problems addressed. Had there been a clear, objective number of dogs that would have been beyond the acceptable limit, it would have been much easier to get these dogs out of these conditions years previous to what we were able to do. So I am definitely in favor of the Dash 2 amendment, which would incorporate the cap.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Chair Holby, committee members, my name is Jim Dorr. I work for the Albany Police Department. I'm a community service officer, and part of my job is animal control. I'm also a member of the executive board, and the reason I'm here today is to read a statement that the executive board from Oregon Animal Control Council has come up with. Just to give you a quick background on our council, we represent city, county, and different humane societies throughout the state of Oregon. The Oregon Animal Control Council is offering our support of House Bill 2470-2 based on the following reasons. The law will prohibit people from having 50 or more sexually intact dogs aged 2 years or older. This is simply not an unreasonable number, since unless they are breeding them, it's too many dogs for any individual to spend quality time with. Most often, when we see these type of numbers, we are dealing with a rescue type operation where, if legitimate, we'll already have a range for the altering of the rescued dogs. More often than not, when you are dealing with these numbers, they are using them for a profitable reason. The law would also require special conditions when they had 10 or more sexually intact dogs. These conditions will give a higher quality of life for dogs and will exclude the puppy mill, do as little as possible, but get me the puppies type of business. It's not that we care if people raise puppies, it's just that we care about the quality of life for those dogs. As far as the pet dealers are concerned, we again do not advocate against people being able to do this, but we want them to be reputable. When they sell animals and represent them as healthy or a specific breed, we feel that the public has a reasonable right to expect honesty from the dealers. A veterinarian check to make sure that they are healthy is nothing that we feel is out of line. Paperwork for registrations is nothing that we find out of line. We feel the law has checks and balances to offer protection for the dealers and the public. The Oregon Animal Control Council do not support the practice of puppy mills, but we are not against reputable business raising and selling dogs as long as there are guidelines that to protect the businesses, public, and most importantly, the animals themselves. We feel that this bill addresses those concerns, and therefore we are offering our support of House Bill 2470-2.
Thank you very much for your testimonies today. Representative Barton, I want to try to keep our comments or questions to a minimum so we can get all the public testimony we can, but go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Beckstead. You might recall in the last public hearing we had, my constituent Ken Ray actually brought up a very clever point. He said that oftentimes responsible breeders will retain a possessory interest or remainder interest, as it were, on dogs that they sell, such that if the subsequent owners are using them or treating them improperly, they can actually retain, full possession, but it's technically a possessory interest. I was wondering, I know we've discussed this, and I think you were going to accommodate this, and I'm wondering if how in the dash any of the amendments you've taken that into account.
Chair Holby, Representative Barton, I do remember that, and I think it was a legitimate concern. I cannot see in the Dash 2 amendments if that question has been specifically addressed, but certainly it makes sense to me that a person who simply holds some legal title but not a possessory or a custodial relationship with the animal should be held to the same standard, obviously, as someone who's actually living on the property and caring for the animal.
Thank you, Ms.
Representative Riley.
I just wanted to respond to that, and it's, we took the word own out of the bill, and I believe that was to address that particular issue.
Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sharon Scott, you mentioned Washington, and they have a bill moving. What's the cap in California, Idaho, Nevada, the other states that surround it?
Chair Holby, Representative Wingard, I do not believe that Idaho has a puppy mill law. I don't know if California does or not. I don't believe it does. And so I know that there are states that have adopted a cap. There are also states that have adopted only the minimum care standards. The problem in the states with the that have only adopted the minimum care standards is that the puppy mills are still flourishing because law enforcement has no reason to go on and start counting dogs.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I want to move on to the next panel. I really appreciate. I just wanted to make one comment that that Sharon made about the hoarder issue in this. And I believe this bill has a 70 dog per person limit that would apply to them as well.
Only for the purpose of sale.
That I'm not sure about. There, that might be one of the clarifications in the amendment we're coming back with.
Super.
Thank you. Next up, I have Patty Strand, Cheryl Lopate, I hope I said that right, Lopate, Jeff Jennings, and Mary Strom. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record,
Chairman,
if you'd like to begin.
Yes. Chairman Holvey, Committee, I'm Patty Strand. I'm here on behalf of NAIA, the 85 kennel clubs in Oregon, and the American Kennel Club, and to oppose the original version of the bill, to thank you for the opportunity to participate in the work group that we did. It was certainly an interesting experience, and I agree with Sharon Harmon in that I would say that everybody on that committee did care very deeply about animals. We had different ideas about the best way to improve the welfare of Oregon's dogs. And so with that in mind, I regret that we were unable to reach a consensus, but very, very thankful on March 27th when I received the four amendments that you put forward, because included in those amendments, the dash 3 and the dash 4 amendments, excluded the cap, which has been the key to the bill for us. And not for, and I believe people on the opposite side may truly believe what they're saying, that the reason we're against this is because of some kind of business interest, but it really isn't. It's because, as the people who have worked with animal issues in the state of Oregon, dog breeders, veterinarians, working with rescue, all the different things we do, training and so on, and in my own case, actually going on various tours of kennels and knowing exactly what's out there and what isn't, I know that prohibition, which is really what a cap is in this particular case, doesn't work. It's never worked. And when you work, and I think if you talk to animal control agents about this, certainly it's been true with the American Kennel Club and with people that I know in the U.S. Department of Agriculture who work with kennels, the minute that you prohibit a particular practice, it goes underground and you lose all your ability to raise standards in that environment. It's just a fact. And it happens whether it's alcohol you're banning or the number of dogs people can ban. It is far better to have a well-regulated community than to simply ban something. And so I wanted to point that out. And I'm going to turn it over here in just a second to the rest of the committee to speak to specific points in the Dash 4 amendments, which I think we all do view as a big improvement. I wanted to say on the slat issue, which is the other one that you've raised here, that is not an issue for Oregon because we don't have the slat issue in Oregon. All of the people that I have talked to have done considerable calling to try to find out what exists, but that if it does exist, they don't mind losing it. So that's really not an issue for this group to worry about. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey and the rest of the committee, I am Dr. Cheryl Lopate. I'm a veterinarian. I am board certified in theriogenology, which is the specialty of reproduction in animals, and I work in a reproductive referral practice on small animals and horses. I am really going to stick to my veterinary concerns with this bill as it stands, and the Dash 4 is probably the one that I'm going to discuss it most. The concerns about the requirement on the bill that bitches must be rested between successive cycles is not a recommendation that we make for brood bitches. It is quite unhealthy for them to have open cycles. It's an opportunity for infection to take hold and to result in pyometra, mucometra, hydrometra, which are can be life-threatening conditions for these bitches. So our recommendation for our breeders is that they wait until the bitches attain mature age and mature size, which is going to be 18 months for the toy breeds and 24 months for the small, medium, large, and giant breeds at a minimum. And at that point in time, that if they are using them for breeding and they've passed all their health certifications, that they are then bred on successive cycles until the desired number of litters has been attained. And then at that point in time, they should be spayed. So we do not want bitches to have open cycles. It's an unhealthy condition for them to be in, and they were not intended to be open. It increases our risk of pyometra. So I strongly recommend against having that type of statement in there. We're going to severely put these bitches at risk by doing that. I think others have spoken on caps. I oppose caps. I think that as Representative Widener said, we the number of animals that we see coming into veterinary clinics that receive poor care, there's as many of those coming out of numbers of kennels that have small numbers as they have large numbers. And I think that setting caps really for the large commercial operations, they're under USDA guidance already. The puppy mills that are not under USDA guidance and don't want to be, if you set a cap for them, they're going to find a way to spread their dogs out so that they can continue to have them. So I see that as a way of pushing the unwanted puppy mills underground and limiting breeders to having whatever animals they want. As far as exercise is concerned, there's a number of exercise requirements in this bill. Say that animals are required daily exercise. There is no stipulation in any of the bill's amendments for weather, breed, physical health conditions, things of that concern. If you take a bulldog or a pug outside and force exercise for an hour in the summertime, you're going to kill those dogs. So we should be requiring that animals have regular exercise, and that's going to vary based on the breed. And the dog and the time of year, and whether it's a blizzard outside or pouring down rain outside, we don't want these dogs forced outside in inclement weather. So I think that those exercise requirements need to be adjusted. I'm very concerned that we are exempting humane societies, animal shelters, rescue organizations from these bills. As veterinarians, we see in pet stores, we see some of the sickest animals that we get coming from these types of organizations. So I think that saying that they are not required to provide adequate care, but the people that are breeding animals are, is not providing care for the animals that are coming out of these shelters. And I think that everybody should be held to the same standard as the breeders are being held.
Thank you. I'm going to have to move on. You're well over your 3 minutes. Can you wrap up in 10, 15 seconds or so?
And can I just do one more on the congenital defects and the infectious disease?
15 seconds.
The infectious disease of 15 days, many of our infectious diseases have a very short incubation period, so animals going to new homes within 2-3 days may have acquired parvovirus, influenza virus, herpes virus, corona, distemper, and these diseases did not come from the breeder. So setting a limit of 15 days for diseases for an animal to be examined at the veterinarian is not a reasonable limit for a number of the infectious diseases that we see commonly coming out of both humane societies and shelters and breeders.
Thank you. It'd be helpful if you could get some of these specific points to us in writing.
I actually emailed all of you this morning with all these points.
Oh, okay. Well, I get hundreds. I haven't seen it yet, so probably take me a week to get down to that far. But anyway, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Holby, committee. My name is Jeff Jennings. I am a professional trainer, and I have a licensed commercial kennel in Clackamas County. I was here today to oppose the bill. Late Friday, we received the four different versions of the amendments. There are two of those amendments that we would still object to. I'd like to explain those very quickly. Two would be acceptable with some very minor adjustments. So on that note, I want to thank Representative Riley. I participated in the second work group. There were some tensions and there were some difficulties, but we also made a lot of progress. And in reviewing the four, every one of the four versions of the amended bill, I was very, very pleased to see that there was a lot of movement made there. I think we're very close. A couple of specific points that are missing from all four of the versions that are very important. You'll remember we discussed training kennels as an exemption. There is no exemption for training kennels. There is an exemption for a boarding kennel based on an average, a boarding kennel being defined as a facility that operates for a fee with an average stay for a dog being 30 days on average. In the case of a training kennel, the kennel is operated much the same way as a boarding kennel, but in a situation where a dog is being trained, that period of time could easily be as long as a year. So there is no protection for a training kennel per se in there, and when I think we all agree that we don't want to do anything to harm businesses, that would still be very harmful to my business. I can't keep client dogs that long. Okay. We have sent specific amendments to the very fine adjustments that we have to address. Another thing that was missing, we talked about temporary kenneling for transportation. I see that there is, in these amendments, we did make note of commercial carriers, which would address the airline issue. There is nothing in any of the four versions that still provides for private transportation and temporary kenneling while at show events. For example, if someone travels across the country, a dog is going to primarily be kept in a pet porter type kennel during that show event. We need to be able to do that. So those two issues are the details that I'd like to bring up. I'd like to, if I may, in time I have left, address a couple of topics that were being made. The cap is still the big issue. I don't know how to say it in a way that might not make some people twinge, but it's so simplistic to think that a cap is a necessary tool for the control here. If that worked, that does not make this a puppy mill bill. We have to address standards for care. The bill still fails in all four of the revised editions. It still fails to do an adequate job of addressing care standards for the dogs rather than just relying on a number as a way of controlling puppy mills. We all want to stop puppy mills. Putting a number is so simplistic that the puppy mills will slide right underneath that. They'll still be able to divide up into smaller sized operations and still continue to do the same things they've done. I think the committee did an excellent job working on what was a lemon law. I don't see it as a lemon law anymore, and I think that most breeders would be satisfied that this is something we can live with. Most conscientious breeders are doing the very things that the bill now asks for.
If you can wrap it up in about 10 seconds, I'm not going to get to all the people that want to talk today.
I just would like to say that on the cap, a tool of having a number to address a puppy mill is, we saw in the last hearing on the 23rd, we saw a number of cases, they were hoarders, but we saw cases that were successfully prosecuted. Counting the number of dogs that somebody has does not mean those dogs are poorly cared for, and that is something that could be very dangerous to any responsible pet owner or breeder.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Hi, Representative Holvey and the committee. My name is Mary Strom Bernard, and I live in Yamhill County. I have 67 acres, and I maintain 20 to 25 dogs at any one time. It varies depending on who's being out, going showing, etc. And I do take dogs into rescue. I am against the cap. I see the only amendment here that is fairly workable as Amendment 4. And I think that there's some things that the this bill, although there are improvements, and I was in the first work group, and I see some things that have improved from the original bill, I think there is still some ground here. Every spring and summer, I go, you know, into town, into McMinnville, and there are the puppies that are being sold at Walmart, the Walmart puppies. There are puppies that are being sold out of vehicles, and this bill doesn't touch that at all. And I see it as a, you know, issue in my community. And I'm, as I said, I'm against that. I also agree with Cheryl as far as the breeding bitches, you know, leaving them open causes them to have false heats and false pregnancies, that sort of thing. And it's very difficult to manage. My personal program is that we breed, you know, my bitches a couple times. If I get a really nice puppy, they're stayed and they're placed in a pet home. So that's.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your comments on the specifics of the bill. I know that we talked about the issues you brought up this morning. I know at least one of those was supposed to have been in there as far as the transportation was supposed to be in the bill. And there was some discussion about the trainers. They didn't fall under this bill because they don't have dogs for breeding purposes. But we're still looking at that piece, too. So we're going to try to address that.
Can I say one thing to that? Mr. Beckstead made a comment that this bill tries to apply to only breeding dogs. There is nothing that defines what a breeding dog is or is not, mm-hmm. other than the statement about being intact or not. And again, a training kennel is going to be filled with intact dogs, and mm-hmm. we need to specify what makes that a breeding dog and what doesn't.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Note taken. I appreciate you coming forward. I appreciate your participation in trying to help us shape a bill that makes sense. I guess it's in the eye of the beholder at the end of the day, but we're going to try to come up with something.
It's there.
Next up, I have Larry Peets, Kristen Solis, Ruth Hudnut, Ingrid Kessler here?
No. She was who Jamie Fitzpatrick replaced.
Oh, okay.
Judy Brandt.
Is she here now? Is Judy Brandt here? No, I called her up once before. I don't think she came. And so how about Glenn Kolb? Okay. Well, are any of those people I called up here?
They're outside.
Larry Peets, Kristen Solis, Ruth Hudnut. I just kept calling out names. I knew somebody would show up sooner or later. Thank you very much. Coming. Whoever wants to go first, if you'd identify yourself before, for the record, before you start.
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, welcome. My name is Glenn Kolb. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. Mr. Chair and committee members, actually, you know, this bill has been a difficult one for us to consider. We recognize the good intentions of House Bill 2470, the desire to address puppy mills, and also to provide consumer protection for people who buy dogs from breeders who are unscrupulous sellers of dogs, too. Because we could not sufficiently reconcile what we see were the good aspects of this bill, and also some that fell a little short from our perspective, we've not adopted a position other than going neutral on this. Our board members still have some concerns. We've heard from veterinarians around the state who have some concerns. Some of those actually have been addressed by some of the working group, and we appreciate that, and actually we appreciate having the ability to participate and have a representative in a working group. Some have already been discussed here. One is about a cap. It's approximately, there are about 34 pieces of legislation across the country. They're addressing similar legislation, and caps range from 15 to 20 to 25 to 30 to 40 to 50 and up to 75. So it seems to be an arbitrary selection of that. And bans solely based on the number of dogs that are kept in facilities seem to be arbitrary, have no scientific basis. That said, we do know that both large and small facilities can be managed well, as long as sufficient trained staff is implemented. And Chair Hulvey, you've added that as one of the things you wanted to see, is have some sufficient staff to look after these animals. But the one true barometer of care and well-being of an animal is really a standard of care. And that is beginning to be actually addressed even further in this bill, which we like to see the standard of care addressed. But it also is that one true part that is consistent, can be applied irrespective of whether a dog is intact or altered. And regardless of whether you've got it's a backyard breeder, a breed store, or a puppy store, pet store, also a commercial breeder, too. And again, some of the definitions that have been going and been discussed, we appreciate changes, regular exercise. That adjustment is good. We do have some concerns about adequate rest between breeding cycles. Dr. Lopate addressed that, and I hope at least you will consider and take a look at that. Quickly to the consumer protection provisions, there have been some adjustments. Still, we'd like to have some considerations about the change. The difficulty is that all dogs are considered property in Oregon. They aren't like a refrigerator or a microwave. They come with a warranty. Physiological beings and their health and well-being can change. As Dr. Lopate had mentioned in her comments, of the incubation period with parvovirus, coronavirus, it's difficult to say where that came and what that time frame is. So it's just something we want the committee to consider. And I guess finally, to wrap it up and give other people the time here too, is if I were to buy a dog from a pet breeder or store and the dog has some malady, deformity, what is my recourse? To whom do I report? What agency do I go to help me mediate that? And it's been discussed, I think, briefly in the working group, but hasn't been addressed in the bill, and I hope we can get some clarification on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Hulvey, and committee members. I want to commend you for, first of all, hearing something like this in these economic times and taking the time to actually look at a bill, an issue at this time. And I want to thank the task force that worked on this, because they've made significant improvement from the original bill. But I'm here in support of 2470.
And if you could identify yourself.
I'm Dr. Larry Peets. I'm a veterinarian who's practiced here in Oregon and in Willamette Valley for the last 35 years. I just want to address one point that Glenn brought up. I am a member of the OBMA and the AVMA, as well as being a member of the Humane Society Veterinary Medical Association. So, but one of the points that Glenn brought up is that these indeed are not toasters or appliances that we're buying. These are living critters, and they, when they're bred commercially, for sale in mass, you increase the risk significantly for passing on congenital and diseases that will subject these animals to a life of pain and suffering. As veterinarians, as a practicing veterinarian, it became obvious to me early on in my career that puppies that were sold, that were produced, and I worked with a lot of reputable breeders, and were not here. They work hard to protect the integrity of the breed that they're working with, and I think that's commendable. But when we would see puppies that came out of pet stores or over the internet or were, you know, shipped from someplace, they were ill when they arrived, and the public had very little recourse. I think that the 2470-2, while it's not perfect, it certainly is a step in the right direction, and I would ask that you support that legislation. And to me, it seems like we have to do something. It's been too many years that this has been going on, and taking a step in the right direction with the passage of this legislation.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Kristen Sulis. I'm a veterinarian practicing in Oregon. I'm also a practice owner, also a member of the OVMA, AVMA, and HSVMA. I have worked in practices that worked mainly with some of the local pet stores that saw pets. We were one of the exclusive veterinarians who would look at these pets and give them bills of health on their free exams. I saw many pets with various ailments, and in fact I'd like to mention one of them, which happened to be a dog that was returned, a small mini poodle that was returned at 8 weeks old, sold at 8 weeks, returned 3 days later for a limp. Most small breed dogs will have abnormal kneecaps that slip off to the side, and we presume that that's what was going on. And on x-ray and examination, we found that this dog had severe hip dysplasia. In fact, I would not even call it subluxation of the hips, which is just partial movement of the hips outside of the socket, but actually full luxation, where her hips are not even attached. This dog, instead of being euthanized, was offered up to the store for adoption, and she is now a member of my family. So we've seen many dogs, infectious diseases as well, of course, parasites, various issues that are coming out of not only these pet stores, but pets that are coming from questionable lineage. These are not your breeders that care for these pets. I see them all the time, these pets that come in from reputable breeders with this wonderful packet of information about the breed, pictures of the family members, picture of the grandfather, of the grandmother, the lineage. I mean, these are not the ones that we're worried about. We are worried about the mills, these people that are using our best companions for money. They are not looking at the best care of these pets. They are looking at making the most money in the easiest way. So I would definitely urge you to vote yes on House Bill 2470, and I would support the -2 amendment. If I can have one more moment and talk about the caps.
Okay, certainly.
Quickly.
Quickly.
So the caps, I do think that it's very important to have a cap, just as many people have said that it's important to have that cap so that we can look at how many dogs are being kept on these facilities, how many breeding dogs. And when you have 50 breeding dogs in a facility, I don't know how anyone without a large staff could take care of that amount of dogs and their puppies. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Hovley and committee people, I just want to speak on behalf of my little dog, Winky. Winky is now 16. We purchased her. We didn't know it was a small puppy mill. We asked the people if we could get an adult Lhasa Apso. She was 3 years old. We took her immediately to our vet. Her little teats were hanging to the floor. They were dripping milk. She was basically hairless except for her head and tail and some on her legs.
Could you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. Ruth Hudnett, Portland, Oregon.
Right. And just so everybody else knows, and I apologize, it was my fault for not letting people know, but we weren't going to do graphic pictures and things like this at this hearing. Our committee saw enough of that last.
No, she's just a little 16-year-old now.
I know. I just don't want to open it up to all the tons of pictures and stuff. Our committee saw plenty of pictures last time.
Oh, I can imagine.
Thank you.
We took her to our vet, Dr. Chris Holstein, at Gresham Animal Clinic, and he said that she would not live to be 5 years old. She's now 16. She weighed 7.5 pounds, and a normal dog of that age would weigh 14 and a half. And in her prime, she did weigh 14. She's now 12 pounds now. But I just want to speak on behalf of those little dogs, the little female dogs. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to take the chair's prerogative just for a second, and since I've got the veterinarians in front of me, so the issue about the rest periods for the breeding bitches as such,
am I hearing that there shouldn't be rest periods?
I think that's something that you want to address to the board of specialists on theriogenology. Definitely, I have some breeding females that I work with, but mainly I work with spayed and neutered animals. So I would really defer to her prerogative on that. I have seen the diseases that she mentions in intact female dogs, the pyometra, mucometra, and other issues. But I have also seen plenty of intact female dogs that do go through rest periods because they're showing or doing other things where they cannot be bred for that period of time.
Yeah, I would concur. I really don't have statistics for you on the fact of whether resting through a cycle is advantageous or not, because I'm in a general practice and definitely do not specialize in that.
Okay. Thought we'd have another expert, but maybe.
Yeah.
I appreciate your testimony today, and I appreciate your interest and your commitment to the subject matter anyway, and your help in helping us craft something that's right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, I have Karen Timms, Larry Schwartz, Mary Beers, and Judy Chambers.
So they're coming up. Could I ask a quick question, Mr. Chair?
Representative Wagner.
Would it be all right if we got a fiscal on this, because it appears we could be creating a whole new population of victims with this bill, so especially if we have a cap. So there could be a fairly substantial fiscal on this after hearing from the police department and everything that they're going to have to go in and inspect.
Representative Widener, there is always a fiscal on bills that we pass out, so that's part of the rules. It will come. We're not passing the bill out today, so... we're not in work session, we're in public hearing. So appreciate that. We'll make sure we get one, though. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
I'm Dr. Karen Tim. I'm a veterinarian. I practiced in California and then went back to school, and I'm actually a DVM, PhD, and a diplomat in the American College of Laboratory Animal Medicine. As part of my, and then came to Oregon and taught at Oregon State University in the College of Veterinary Medicine for 20 years and am now retired. I'm also a dog owner. I do dog agility with my dog's dog. I'd like to, and in my, especially my 20 years in education, I did a lot of work and study on ethics of animal use, some writing and speaking on ethics of animal use. So I have a lot of years of experience in these areas and dealing with these issues mostly from the laboratory animal perspective, but also as a pet owner. First, I'd like to comment, I think you've had a board-certified theriogenologist speak to you. And
right, I heard her. I was trying to get a second opinion.
Right. She's the expert. I really like the suggestion that was made a while ago about taking this back to a task force to look at strengthening animal abuse laws and coming back in 2 years to the next session. I think this measure is seriously flawed. Of the parts of it that I've could live with, some of it would be the Fourth Amendment. I think you better be very careful. I taught embryology, and you have some definition issues. Are you talking about genetic defects in these dogs or congenital defects? There is a difference. I'm talking about both of them. How are you going to identify that? So that's an area of my expertise. I also would like to broaden the discussion a little bit. As a veterinarian and part of the state of Oregon, I think you're dealing with a very slippery slope when you put a cap on one animal commodity, which is, I realize there's a lot of emotion, but really is what we're talking about here is animal commodity. Dogs is a commodity in this bill. And you have dairy cows in this state that are a commodity. Are you going to cap the number of dairy cows that you can have? Or sheep, or horses, or salmon. And what you're trying to do, as people have said, is legislate from the top down. Some people would say all dairy cows are abused, and that may be the next step here. I really like the paper trail idea. also. I think part of your issue is as soon as you really limit breeding dogs in this state, they're going to bring more in from out of state, then what are you going to do?
Thank you.
I'm Lawrence Schwartz, and I'm from Seal Rock, Oregon, on the Oregon coast. I did not have the opportunity to be on the work groups, and I'm not privy to the amendments either, but I think my comments are more general, and I'll try to limit it to about 2 minutes. I'm an occasional breeder of English Springer Spaniels. We obtained our first Springer when we were married in 1958 and have a litter whenever we have an opening for another Springer for ourselves, usually following the passing on of one of our geriatric Springers. Our interests are in showing and confirmation shows, such as the 2 hour shows held in Albany this weekend, and participating in performance events, such as obedience competitions and tracking tests, where dogs show how well they can track human scent, precursor to search and rescue. I have been a vice president of our breed's National Parent Club and chair of the Genetics and Health Committee of that organization. I am also vice president for science and research of our breed's charitable foundation, which has established the largest DNA bank of any AKC recognized breed and has sponsored important research into genetic problems of the breed. I have worked with the Michigan legislature and canine legislation and helped to write that state's dangerous animal legislation. I have distributed copies of the Oregon Department of Agriculture rules, care of pet and captive animals, and these rules are excellent and do in a better way much of what 2470 attempts to accomplish. I make the point that what we need is the will to enforce the laws we have, not to create new laws to try to reinvent the wheel. This bill is very interesting because it seems to be a conglomeration of two bills, one dealing with abuse and the other one dealing with the Lemon Law and consumer protection. I think the latter is the cup and tea of this committee, and I think this is your expertise. The other one is kind of maybe should be in another committee, but that's, I think, where we have a lot of issues. House Bill 2470 may have many unintended consequences. There is no mechanism for measurement of the number of dogs in the proposed act. The only way to count would be for a law enforcement officer to gain access to the premises. House Bill 2470 avoids due process by establishing probable cause through the use of numbers. A law enforcement officer could enter any premises at any time of day or night without a warrant, ostensibly to count dogs. This sets up any property owner for harassment, whether or not they have dogs. House Bill 2470 is a setup for harassment. Feuds between neighbors could be exacerbated by simply making a dog complaint to animal control that there were a trigger number of dogs on the premises, which they would then be required to act upon. The trigger mechanism for an animal control law should be behavior, not numbers. Many of the Lemon Law features are included in my own contracts with puppy purchasers, which I have distributed to the committee. However, there is one feature that is flawed and would have to be changed before this bill is considered for enactment. Section 5B states that a customer is entitled to remedy if within 2 years after the customer acquires the dog, a veterinarian states in writing that the dog has or the dog died as a result of a congenital or hereditary defect adversely affecting the health of the dog or requiring hospitalization or non-elective surgical procedures. The problems with this clause are twofold. First, there are only a few conditions assumed hereditary for which we have reliable DNA tests. Multi-genetic conditions such as epilepsy, heart disease, and cancer do not have such tests, and their eventual occurrence cannot be established a priori before a puppy is sold. We do all known DNA disease testing, which is available for our breed, before a puppy is sold, and the results are shared with the purchaser. There should be no recourse for a purchaser for disease which cannot be detected a priori.
Can you sum it up in about 10 seconds? You're
yes.
About a minute and a half longer than everybody else so far.
Okay,
I'm trying to give you some deference.
I'm done. Thank you.
I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you for your indulgence.
Yeah.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, my name is Judy Chambers. I was fortunate enough to be a member of the first work group that looked into House Bill 2470. I appreciate the hard work the committee and the work groups have gone to. I appreciate the amendments that have been put forth by this committee. And I'm particularly pleased with the process of HB 2470-4. With a few minor clarifications and adjustments already discussed by some of the people that preceded me, we had a reproductive specialist speak to the excessive breeding limitation. We had a trainer speak to the need to clarify training facilities, also clarifying the transportation versus living containment. And then we had veterinarians speak to the 15 days health examination after purchasing a puppy. With those four clarifications, I think House Bill 2470-4 is a very workable bill if one should go forward out of this committee. Our diverse community wants to continue to be a part of the process. Between the people that have spoken in opposition to this bill, we literally have hundreds of years of experience and commitment to the care and breeding of dogs. We, through our work, strengthen the human and animal bond. And we ask that you please take advantage of our knowledge, listen to what we have to say, and together we can safeguard the rights of responsible animal owners and breeders. We can educate the community as well as protecting the consumer, which I think is why this bill is before the Consumer Protection Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mary Beers, and I'm one of the owner-operators of Umpqua Valley Kennels, and I attended both of the work group meetings, and want to express thanks for being part of that. It's a very unique experience. I live in a very sheltered universe. I am agreeing with the consumer protection part of this, and I'll tell you why. As a business owner and someone who is in this business, because it is a business, and it is like any other business where services offered or products offered can be misrepresented, and they can be people can be taken advantage of when they make their purchases. I, as a business owner that likes to do things right, we take a great pride in our dogs and our puppies and welcoming people into our farm, showing all the environments where we keep our dogs and puppies and how we treat them and care for them. We like to think that because we live in a capitalistic society and good deeds and good business practices are rewarded, that is how we impress upon people they should buy a puppy from us, because they see everything is on the up and up. It is the people that are unscrupulous. And God knows I've been screwed by a lot of dog dealers myself, because I don't inbreed and I don't line breed, which means I have to be put in the position of someone purchasing a dog from someone else. And it's scary. It's scary out there. It's like a used car sales lot where you don't know what you're driving off with sometimes, and that can be a bad thing. Anyway, we think transparency in doing business is the number one most important thing we do, besides loving our dogs and pouring everything we have into them 24/7. I would like to see every dog breeder that way, regardless of the number of dogs that they're raising, whether it be one litter a year or 25 litters a year or more. And I said in the work group, I'm convinced, because I've seen it, someone can have 200 dogs and employ a staff of 20 people, and they are pampered and they are taken care of very well. The other things that are not done are not brought up in this as far as care that are relied upon an individual breeder's program is in, for instance, what we do. Our dogs are bred every cycle, so I do object to that part. And what I am supporting is the Fourth Amendment, just to be on the record for that, except for the pausing cycles. Our dogs don't breed until they are 18 months to 2 years old, till we know what we have. Some of them are never bred. They're placed right into private homes if they're not what we want. When they are bred, they're given the opportunity to breed. They don't always take every time. They're given the opportunity to breed every cycle. And so if they start at 2 years old, we're retiring them before they're 6 years old, sometimes sooner. if this is not a life that is healthy for them. And we examine their uteruses when we're on top of it for C-sections. All these things, you know, someone who cares about their dogs are going to be doing. I think anyone else, the consumer protection laws are very important because the money in a capitalistic society where you're in a business and you do it right and you do it well, you should prevail. And people who are not doing it right, not doing it well, because of complaints and things put in our laws for their rights as purchasers, will drive them out of business. So I'm very heavy into that. I do care and love dogs, and I want to see the conditions increase, but a cap is not the way to do it. Because all that's going to happen with a cap is, again, I'll just say it, they'll go underground, or they'll lie to the control officer that comes out. How's he going to know that dog's 2 years old? It's unrealistic. It's unreliable. So make the consumer part strong. Make the improvement, you know, of their conditions better and enforce on that. But other than that, I think you're just going to drive them underground. You're not going to get it unless you get it where the money hits, which is through sales and through fines.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony and all of your points, and everyone that's testified so far have all made great points and certainly helped us in understanding what some of the, you know, issues still are with this bill. And also, you know, we have some that seems like the cap is the big issue. Some will like the cap, some don't, but the other parts of the bill seem like they're workable, and we need some tweaks around rest periods and training kennels and you know, some of the other things, the transportation issues as well. But I appreciate your testimony. Representative Riley.
Thank you. I just wanted to also thank everyone for all the work that you've all put in. We tried to do the best we could, and I agree that we've heard a lot of things today that I may or may not have heard before but didn't get in the bill. And I especially appreciate the testimony about breeding cycles. That's something we had never heard before, and it's very important. I hope we can come out with a good bill. I just want to, you know, thank everybody who's participated, and I know we're not done, but for those people who have participated, I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming forward and taking your time out, and I especially appreciate hearing from you from your sheltered world. And
I don't get off the farm much.
You're lucky.
Some people accuse us of being a sheltered world. So, right at this moment, I'm going to close the public hearing for House Bill 2470 and reopen the work session on House Bill 2613, was that the right number? 2613. For the purposes, I would want to suspend the rules, allow Representative Tomei to vote on the bills. Any objection? Hearing none. Representative Tomei, how do you vote?
Aye.
The record show that Representative Tomei voted aye on House Bill 2613. With that, I'll close work session on House Bill 2613 and open a work session on House Bill 2614 for the purpose of allowing Representative Tomei to vote on the bill and suspending the rules in order to do that. Any objection to that? Hearing none. Representative Tomei, how do you vote on House Bill 2614?
Yes.
The record show Representative Tomei voted aye for 2614. That I'll close the work session on House Bill 2614. And with that, I'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2470.
We're not done yet, huh?
No.
Darn.
I don't think people understood that they would have some additional opportunity.
If you want to have conversations, can you please take them outside? Thank you. Next up, I'd like to have Laura Ireland, Andrea Kozik, Scott Bartlett, and Connie Teal.
They may have left.
I think people thought that you had closed the hearing.
Closed it for the deal.
Well, that's, you know, making my day a little shorter. I did. I just reopened it.
You just learned the power of the
chair. Check them out. See how it works.
Is it open or is it closed?
It's open. Open. Reopen.
Okay. Don't know whether I need to call the state police now or later. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Scott Bartlett. I live in Eugene, Oregon, and I'm not affiliated with any of these groups, and I'm speaking only on my behalf. I want to thank, first of all, I've been involved in the whole question of animal well-being for 7 years. I'm a member of the Lane County Budget Committee. I was chairman of the Animal Regulation Task Force, and we did a year-and-a-half report about the fate and the condition of animals in Lane County. Worked really hard on it, and I'm on the appointed Animal Services Advisory Committee as well, so been involved in these issues. One aspect that I would hope that you possibly could add to this is giving or conferring upon a county health officer or the designee of a county health officer the ability to find out from sellers or from pet stores the same inoculation information that you put in the bill. I was talking to the former animal director of animal services and talked about a state police officer who bought a dog for his child at a pet store in Eugene, and 3 days later the dog died of parvo. That dog in the intervening period went to the grandparents' house, infected that property, infected other properties. When the director went to that particular pet store, he was told, forget about it. You don't have the authority to do it. Go get a warrant. And so he said one thing to me, because I told him I was coming up here today. If you ask the committee to give the county health officer or the animal control a certain ability to ask that question and have the question answered as to the origin of the dog, but at least the vaccination inoculation status and the inoculation status of canines within the county. Right now there's really confusion within the law. Some counties require disclosure of rabies vaccinations, others don't. If you had a generic authority pursuant to the public health component of your bill, county public health officers or the animal control that ability to get that information, that would really be helpful. And I want to thank you for the work you're doing here. So far as the other things you are tweaking it, it's like, you know, sausages and laws being made. Complex, but the end product usually is a pretty good, you know, meeting of the minds. If you're going to double the size of the caps from 25 to 50, 100% increase, that seems reasonable. I don't think it's reasonable for me to have 2,000 breeding dogs on my 200 acres. I don't think that's reasonable because there's a balance, and you're working on that balance. And I'll tell you, I have seen firsthand the impact of animals that flood into the Lane County Animal Shelter, beautiful animals, that wind up dead after 3 days, the minimum state holding period, 3 days. And I remember the director asked many of the people who have been critics of this bill once, you don't live in the world that we live in where you stand knee-deep in dead animals. So it's a complex issue, and I applaud you for what you've done. It's not the pleasantest issue, but give a public health authority or the animal control the ability to ask the same questions you would give a customer. Where does the dog's vaccination come from? Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Laura Ireland Moore. I'm from Newport, Oregon, and also moved from Selwood area, so nice to see both of you. Thank you for your leadership on this issue as well, Representative Cohen. I am an animal law attorney and used to, as the former director of the National Center for Animal Law at Lucy Clark Law School, and now I'm in private practice out in Walport, Oregon. And in my current position and as the director, I was contacted by a number of people who had purchased animals from pet stores who have a number of problems, and they really have no real legal recourse in terms of the animal laws and the property laws that we have don't adequately redress the problems that they're having. I also have a number of people who call concerned about the conditions of animals, that, their treatment at pet stores. And again, it's as an attorney, there's not much I can do to help direct them, and there's not much recourse. And so I believe that this is a very important bill that lays out the regulations and responsibilities of breeders and the pet stores, gives rights and responsibilities to consumers and provides really important protections for these animals that our anti-cruelty laws weren't really written for. The idea of it of them really protects household pets, and unfortunately, when animals are treated as commodities, they're not really treated as household pets, and they deserve basic protections, even if they don't receive the love and affection that our household companions do. So I support the -2 amendments, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate both of your testimony. It's really important to hear other perspectives from individuals who just come at this from a different angle. So really appreciate the time you took to make it here and providing us your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, I had called Andrea Kozik and Connie Teal. I don't believe they showed up. I'm going to move on to David Calderwood and Kathleen Ettinger.
I'm David Calderwood. I live in Eugene. I'm very tired right now. I drove up from Sacramento last night just to be here. I was doing what I love, and that's judging dogs down there. Most of my thunder has been stolen here. There have been a lot of good comments. It looks like you're headed in the right direction. However, you're right. Caps are unacceptable for us. Absolutely unacceptable. And the reason many of us follow animal rights legislation. We follow the HSUS, which is not a humane society. The person from the Oregon Humane Society said there's no connection. There aren't. Not with any humane society in the United States. Not mine, not yours, not any. It's an animal rights group. And we find the legislation they're supporting is basically making it more and more difficult, more and more expensive to own animals. And I've been told I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyhow because I am tired. Caps are unacceptable. We've heard it from the HSUS themselves. They plan on putting caps in. There was a fellow, I believe he's a director in New York, had a HSUS lobby day just recently. And the caps there they were talking about was 50. And there were people concerned that they were too high. And the report he gave back to them was, we plan on putting caps in, coming back next year, lowering them, coming back the second year, lowering them again, coming back the third year, and lowering them again. We know this is the plan. That's why caps are unacceptable. I don't have 50 dogs. I don't have 75 dogs. That won't affect me now, but it will affect my grandchildren when they're lowered. And that's why they're unacceptable. Also, I am from Lane County. I work with Lane County Animal Control. I just heard about knee-deep in dogs, dead dogs. We don't have that anymore. I was one of the people that helped install no-kill down there. We have dogs in the kennel right now that have been there for 3 months, which is a problem. We're trying to figure out on our task force down there what to do about that. But we don't have those large numbers of dead dogs anymore. In fact, we don't have an overpopulation in the United States anymore. And the reason I can say that is we have hundreds of thousands of dogs being imported from outside of the country, outside of the nation, because of supply and demand. The demand is higher than the supply. And I think in my past testimony, I sent you articles from ABC News, USA Today, proving that. The mental health aspect, the hoarding. There are many different types of hoarders. There's not just one type of hoarder, and some hoarders do sell dogs. And I gave you information on where to go at Tufts University to investigate that. One of the types of hoarders is an exploiter hoarder. There's also a breeder hoarder, and they do sell dogs. However, they are sick, they have mental issues, and the only way to address those problems is to make them get some type of mental health counseling when they're found out. When the conditions, the laws that we have cover conditions when we discover them. Also, the breeding cycles. One of the people mentioned the experts, and you should tap into the people that have the knowledge. We do have the knowledge because we do have hundreds of years of experience. One of the things is the breeding cycles. There's a doctor in Ohio called Dr. Hutchins. He's one of our acknowledged experts on breeding. And according to him, the science is not there that bitches should be skipped, that the uterus will not be damaged any more by breeding back to back than they will by skipping. And so there's more to that story as well. Other than that, most of what I have here is gone because there have been such excellent testimony. You're on the right track. I'm impressed with where you're going with these, but caps are absolutely unacceptable. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Kathleen Ettinger. I'm from Medford, Oregon, so I've really traveled. I've been up for a lot of hours. But anyway, to make a long story short, the cap seems to be a major issue with everyone. I've heard so many testimony here concerning how can someone care for 50 or more dogs? They can. It's called dedication and hard work. Many of these people that have more than 50 dogs get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and they're going steadily all day long. If they're lucky, they're done at 7 o'clock at night. Why do they do this? Because they love the breed or breeds that they are raising. And yes, there are some commercial kennels that have very good quality dogs. I have one in my area. She has 65 dogs. She also has champion Yorkshire Terriers. She has champion Chihuahuas, both varieties. She has a lot of different breeds, quality dogs. Would she sell to this establishment up here in Portland, Scamps? No way. She's particular where her dogs go. And she takes her dogs to the vets to have even the patellas checked. If they don't pass, they are not sold. So CAPS does not mean that you're an unreputable breeder. Also, I want to stress, and I'm running out of time here, there's already some pretty hefty laws on the books under the Oregon Administrative Rules, and it goes more into exactly what you guys need to be dealing with, the lighting, the power source, the potable water, the food, and I've submitted you a copy of that. I hope you'll take time to read it, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Could you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Thank you. Representative Chair Holvey, thank you for the honor of testifying today. Thank you, committee, for the honor of allowing me to be here today. I don't have gruesome pictures, but this is my story, my dog story. I rescued these two dogs, Carson and Laura, from a puppy mill. These are them. Two beautiful, lovely dogs in 1996. And the puppy mill they came from was in Newport, Oregon. And basically what had happened was the police went in there and they found...
Could you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Connie Diane Teal. T-H-E-I-L.
Thank you.
Thank you. What they found in this place was an Auschwitz for dogs. They found 15 dead huskies in a large pile shot in the head. There was actually dog parts all over the place. These dogs were having to live in barrels in the snow with no food and no water, having to actually walk among dead dog parts. And it was just a horrible situation. I've seen video clips of it. And my dogs have actually been on TV several times. They were some of the only survivors of this puppy mill. And just for me, the toll on these dogs, when I first got them, it was literally like having coyotes in your house, but they weren't wild. They were afraid of everything. They wouldn't take food out of your hand. When I took them out to go to the bathroom, I had to put 20-foot-long ropes to pull them back into the house. I couldn't take them for a walk. They were literally catatonic almost. They had been so affected by being in this puppy mill. It took years and years of patience and hard work to get them where they're doing better now. And Carson actually developed Addison's disease, which my vet told me probably was from being in the puppy mill, from being the stress. It's a stress-induced disease. But I would just so encourage you to pass this bill and the amendment for dogs like Carson and Laura. I mean, to this very day, Laura is 14 years old. She still looks two ways like that before she goes into a room. She's still that afraid.
and she's still very afraid of everybody but my immediate family. And just the suffering, and you know, there's so many of these puppy mills that I've just not even known about, but it's time to crack down on these. Oregon isn't known for its compassion. We have to be compassionate. Now, we have to stop, put a kibosh on this type of thing if we're going to be known across the nation as a compassionate state that I hope we will. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the testimony. Next up, I have S. Mackler. And Becky Rose. Boy, I'm struggling. Irma Massey. That's an A.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's her writing, not Irma's. Rob Holmes. Maybe they left when they gaveled in and out, or out and in. I just have time for a couple more testimonies I'm going to take, and I'm going to apologize for all those that have signed up that won't get a chance. Karina Olson, Karen Harold. Looks like I'm running out of people a lot quicker than I thought. Tom?
I just had to find my notes.
Oh, you are here.
I am here.
Tom Levy? Could you introduce yourself for the record? I recognize you from the last hearing.
Yeah, we were both here. Chairman Holme, members of the committee, thank you very much for letting us have a chance to speak today. I want to thank the members of the working group for all the hard work they obviously put into the amendments. I think one of the things that I would like to address, because so many of the things that I've already talked about have been touched, one of which is the concern about the use of a treadmill. I actually had a dog who was injured, and he was using a treadmill under the advice of a veterinarian. I do not see why the use of a treadmill is an issue for an otherwise healthy dog, particularly in our Oregon weather where it's pretty yucky outside most of the year. Using a treadmill allows the dog to have extra exercise, and it needs to be done supervised, etc. But I do think that that is an acceptable mode of exercise. Additionally, and I understand you are going to address the issue of temporary crating situations, but crates only come in certain sizes, and having crates that are 6 inches taller than the dog allows the dog far too much room, and we actually do not want them being able to leap around in their crates because they could potentially harm themselves. The other thing that I'd like to say is that we had two sets of stories at the last hearing. I heard the stories about the people who did their homework. They found the right breed for themselves. They contacted a breeder. They went back to the breeder and actually bought several other dogs from that same breeder. That breeder cared for their dogs while they were out of town, etc. And then we heard the stories of the people who rescued a dog from a bad situation, who bought dogs at pet stores, etc., and they had serious problems. Some of those problems may or may not have come from the dog's background. It was potential that it was related to that particular dog and might have been the same way no matter where it had come from. I think we are making assumptions that one thing leads to another where it may not necessarily do so. I also want to say that I think even though this is the Consumer Protection Committee, we do need to look out for people who don't think things totally through. But whatever happened to personal responsibility? I think we all need to be responsible for our own actions. If I go out and buy something that doesn't, you know, just isn't right, why should everybody else have to pay for it? I need to take the responsibility myself to do my homework, make sure I'm buying a healthy dog from a responsible breeder. I believe in interviewing breeders and doing my homework. And so I think that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Okay. Chairman Holvey, members of the committee. My name is Tom Levy. I live in the Brooks area.
have served on as an officer and board member of many dog clubs in the area that I have belonged to. I am currently a member of the board of directors of the Hungarian Pumi Club of America. My testimony here, the numbers may not be quite right, as I am not familiar with the amendments, and I know they have changed. But again, numbers are critical and the critical problem. As this bill deals primarily with the number of dogs under a person's control, there appears to be more collateral damage than good in this bill. The bill's purpose purports to be anti-puppy mill, but it will likely have the opposite effect. By eliminating pet stores from the regulation, it promotes out-of-state puppy mills and Oregon dog wholesalers. The bill imposes unrealistic controls on legitimate dog professionals and enthusiasts that appear to be a restraint of trade. A boarding and or training kennel would be restricted to housing no more than, and I'm using the original 25 dogs because that is what I had when I prepared. I know this may or may not go up at any point in time. A professional dog show handler would not be able to carry more than 10 dogs on any given weekend because of the exercise requirements. This would apply to any dog professional. With the current economic crisis, can the state of Oregon afford the court costs in defending this bill? It seems that this would also impact a 4-H dog club, as the leader is responsible for the children and the dogs. If the true goal of the bill is stated against puppy mills, it would appear that the best solution would be to withdraw this bill from the current legislative session, form a work group made up of persons from all groups with animal interests, and try to craft a bill that all groups can support to bring back at the next session of this legislature. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony today. I'm going to call up two more. Roy Alcorn, Richard Weiner. Judy James, Ann Sert, Ann Segrist. Oh, found somebody. Thank you. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Representative Halvey, member of the committee, my name is Judy James. I am wearing a couple of hats. I'm a retired public service. Some of you may have seen me in the halls of this building as professional staff in the Legislative Fiscal Office a few years back. After retiring from a long career of public service, I'm now able to follow my passion, which is a lifelong passion related to dogs. I am a professional dog trainer now. I'll soon be opening a facility here in town. I'm also an American Kennel Club judge. I have been a breeder in the past, a purebred case on dogs, and I have trained and competed with many dogs in confirmation, obedience, agility, and other performance sports, including hunting, for the last 40 years or so. I've also been active in rescuing dogs over the years, primarily related to my breed. And there are excellent purebred dog rescue groups here in the town in Oregon who have also had to come to bat a number of times when the Humane Society has gone to intervene. My hobby now is an instructor and behavior consultant. In that capacity, I see a lot of dogs who have been purchased through a pet store or from a substandard facility, and the behavior problems and temperament issues and sometimes the health issues are many and can be many. When it comes from a good breeder that has been responsible and socialized their puppies well, it's a joy to watch that family enjoy their dog for life. House Bill 2470, as it was originally written, fails to give dogs in breeding facilities an adequate standard of care. A couple of weeks ago, you all heard about the Burns situation, the Oregon Humane Society, and cooperation with purebred breed rescues and local law enforcement officials rescued a number of dogs from a puppy mill in Burns. That was possible because of existing excellent laws here in Oregon. I'm a little confused by the law enforcement folks who say they need a number so they can go in. I've been involved in a number of situations where that wasn't the case. When I had a kennel in Clackamas County, I had a conditional use permit that specified how many dogs I could have that were appropriate for my facility. And I was subject to regular inspection for that. It seems that this bill continues to miss the point. Let's target those few individuals that do a lot of breeding. We already have excellent conditional use laws and land use laws in the state that they could be utilized at a local level to regulate individuals who have breeding dogs. I personally wouldn't care if I had 10 intact dogs at a breeding facility. I'd welcome having the law enforcement and animal control people being a partner with me for that. And that would give them the opportunity to correct the substandard issues and address them before it becomes so bad that dogs are starving to death, that they are eating their puppies because they can't take care of them, that are living in their own waste because no one is there to take care of them. Many breeders don't start out that way, but they may get overwhelmed by the numbers. They may have done the 6 in the morning until dark to take care of their animals and then got sick and it overwhelmed them. Those are the people that we need to help, that regulators need to help, and that you as a Consumer Protection Committee needs to be helping and give them the tools to do that. You can do that with the existing law. You can do that through the administrative rule process. It's very clear that you've done a great effort with the amendments in trying to address the issues. But there's a lot of issues that, as a Consumer Protection Committee, you don't deal with well. The Department of Agriculture is the right body to deal with issues of standards of care, to deal with issues of exercise, to deal with the issue of how often you should breed a dog, to deal with the issue of how you define a congenital defect or a hereditary defect, how you regulate that. They are the right ones to define when the breeder ceases to be responsible for communicable disease that a puppy may carry into its home. Let them do their job. Write a bill that directs them to create and promulgate rules to do that. And House Bill 2470, just one more minute, I promise.
How about 10 seconds?
10 seconds.
Wrap it up.
The consumer protection things that you've did in the Dash 4 Amendment I think is excellent. I personally don't think it goes far enough, because if I sell a puppy, I'm going to do that, and I would expect anyone that sells a puppy to give me a written contract that explains the things that that dog has been subjected to and the things that I can expect from that dog and from that breeder or seller.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes. My name is Ann Segrist. I live here in Salem, Oregon. I'm a cat breeder. My cattery is registered with the Cat Fanciers Association. And we just want the dog people to know that we're with you. Our feeling is that the strong laws we have in Oregon on the books have not prevented these puppy mills nor these abuse of animals. And I don't see anything in this that actually will change that. The people who are doing it wrong will still do it wrong. And all that's going to happen is you are going to drive responsible, legitimate, honest, caring breeders out of business because they can't deal with this type of thing. People coming in just, I need to count your dogs. And when do they start on the cats? We're next, aren't we? That's the plan. The cats are next. The cats are housed in homes, usually. And then you have all sorts of invasion of government into a personal residence. And I believe there are some breeders who have a small enough facility that they have few enough animals that they can be home-raised. Puppies on the floor, you see that. And they can be just as legitimate as a big breeder. but they're in a home, not a kennel. And I think somewhere we're losing our ability to deal fairly and honestly and to understand that there are a lot of people who are doing it right, and the ones that are really doing it wrong don't care one tiny little bit about what we're talking about here or what legislation is going to be discussed, passed or not passed. They're going to do their own thing anyway, as long as they can get money for it, because that's what they're interested in, is money. Thank you very much.
Thank you. In committee, I know I said I would be finished up by 5:20. I've gotten a couple of requests, people that have been here trying to testify, and I'm not going to hold anyone here, but I've got three more people that want to testify, and then I'll be closing out. Beverly and Ted Paul and Carol Kangas Hardy.
No.
And certainly, if you don't need to repeat things that others have already said, so if you could make it short.
I've timed
myself.
I'm
supposed to be out of here
in three minutes. By way of introduction, my name is Beverly Ann Paul, and I am a resident of South Salem. A month ago, I came before you and told you about the program Oprah Winfrey had aired on puppy mills that brought more shock, concern, outrage, disgust, and disbelief than any other program she had ever produced. So much so that for the first time, she ran an entirely new show on the same subject. The folks in opposition to this bill say that as hobby breeders, they will be hampered by a 50-dog sexually intact limit. Let us remember, these dogs are a rotating crop. In other words, a farmer doesn't plant a field of corn or wheat and harvest it and then let it go fallow. No, he replants it again and again. So it is with these dogs. They are bred, rebred, again and again. Some of the puppies are sold. Some are retained for future breeding and or showing. Some of the dogs that don't live up to the breeder's expectations are sold as adults. And depending on the size of the breed, they live anywhere from an average of 8 to 16 years. And so the cycle goes on and on. Therefore, to say that imposing a 50-dog limit is an imposition is absurd. The bill says that you can only have 50 sexually intact dogs at one time, not that it is all they can ever have. For 35 years, my husband and I were active in showing and raising quality dogs. In all that time, I never knew of one successful kennel that came even close to the number of 50 sexually intact dogs. In fact, most good conscientious breeders knows that it is quality and not quantity in raising dogs. And let us take a quick look at the term hobby breeder. They say we hate puppy mills, but we are hobby breeders. Yes, this can be a hobby and a very satisfying one at that. But this is not like collecting baseball cards or autographs or matchbook covers that you can put in a box on the closet shelf, or trophies and collectibles that you display behind glass in your hallway. These are living creatures that are in need of constant food, water, shelter, exercise, and social contact. So while, yes, it is a hobby, it has ramifications all of its own. Any reputable breeder that is worth his or her salt should recognize that 50 dogs is more than enough. And finally, let us recognize the fact that all of the folks here today that are in favor of House Bill 2470-2 have at least one dog or cat at home, if not more. They love their animals and fully support and encourage responsible pet ownership. I will close with one of my favorite quotes from Mahatma Gandhi. You can judge the moral character of a nation by the way it treats its animals. Thank you very much for your time and your attention.
Thank you. Could you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Yes, my name is Carol Kness Hardy. I'm the co-founder of Canine Companions for Independence, which is the largest service dog training, placement, and breeding program in the United States. I am also a 33-year user of assistance animals, and I'm accompanied today by my helper, Nancy. I came to this meeting to share with you my unique perception of the importance of well-bred, purebred dogs who have generation after generation been bred for a specific purpose. There are many things in the bill that I don't support, but I'm also retired now and a homeowner in Oregon, and I happen to be 30 miles from this location on a small ranch. One of my neighbors has a puppy mill. I would love to see it shut down, but we don't have adequate animal control services in this state to even enforce our current laws. There are two things that I have not seen in the bill, nor have I heard them addressed today, and I will only mention those two things to you. First of all, it seems to me that this bill is trying to incorporate four very unique groups into one bill. That is the pet stores, the puppy mills, the hoarders, and the professional responsible breeders. I admire your ability to try to do that. I'm not sure that it will be possible, especially in the time limits that remain. Perhaps Representative Gilliam is correct that it's time to think about a new bill or multiple bills that will address the unique needs and problems of each of these groups. Secondly, I would like to see in whatever bill or bills are ultimately put before the state for made into law, a provision that would enable animal enforcement to be implemented, especially in rural areas. We have no animal control in my area. When the dogs from the puppy mill got loose several months ago, came onto my property and killed several of my livestock, I was told by Salem Humane Society that they had no officers that worked in my area. We used to have one, but funding was cut about 10 years ago. Then we called the Sheriff's Department, which is who we were told to contact by the Humane Society, and we were told that if we wanted to catch the animals and bring them in, they could be impounded, or if a person was being attacked and was in danger, they would send an officer. They simply don't have the resources to enforce the bills and the laws that we currently have. There's no way, especially in rural counties, that even tighter bills will be enforced with anything that will actually improve the puppy mill situation. So I would like to see provisions for funding sources that would implement enforcement of the laws, whether it's the old laws or new laws. And I would like to see some differentiation between the four very distinct groups that are involved in this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Did you have anything to add, sir?
Very little. Most of it's already been said, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Holvey, I thank you and the entire group, and particularly Representative Riley, who handled the...
If you could identify yourself.
My name is Ted Paul. I'm a past breeder of some 35 years. I'm currently on the board of directors of Project Pooch out at McLaren, something that most of the legislature knows about already. A really great group that has a win-win situation for both youth and for animals. I just wanted to make mention of the fine job done by Chuck in giving everybody that attended those work sessions an opportunity to say what it was that they were interested in. And as a result, I think we are much closer than it would appear. I would echo Senator Walker, I believe it was, that was here earlier in the day, and say, let's remember, we're not trying to fix everything. We're just trying to get puppy mills. And if we can do that out of House Bill 2470-2, I think we can do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I appreciate all that have come to testify, and apologize to any of those that came that were unable to testify. If you want to turn in written testimony, we'll accept that written testimony until Wednesday.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Krieger.
On the way home the other day, I went by a large place, and there's a horse in a place about twice the size of this room, bare dirt. Horse was skinny, terrible conditions. I thought, how can those people keep a horse in that condition and live with it and see it out their yard every day? And we're coming back by Corvallis, there's 30 in an area, large, good facilities, well-fed. The numbers, folks, that's not your problem. I would rather see 50 or 75 or 100 dogs in a beautiful kennel, well cared for, fed, seeing a vet the way we all want them to, then 10 in a facility that's not being properly taken care of. Now, the representative Tomei and I have been working a lot with foster children. Do you think all those foster kids come out of houses with 10 or 15 and being neglected there? I've seen them come out of foster homes with one or two children not being taken care of, and I've seen families with 6, 7, and 8 because of the diligence and the care of the parents. Being responsible, we have good homes. It's no different. My enforcement days with the state police, I ran into this. It wasn't the number.
Representative Krieger. Can you wrap it up in about 10 seconds?
Yeah. I've been sitting here quiet, but, you know, I'm willing to bet you that if you look at these people that we're talking about from these puppy mills, because of what they're doing, I'm willing to bet you that 90% of them have mental problems, or you couldn't treat animals that way.
Thank you, Representative Krieger. I don't believe foster care allows 100 kids in a house, though, either. So,
no.
You know.
You don't even get it.
So, with that, I appreciate everybody's testimony. thank you for staying throughout this. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2470.
We'll get it.
With that, I adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection.
Thank you.